Hey folks, it's me, Ben Blacker, the creator and host of The Writers Panel. Thank you, as always, for listening. Busy times right now. Things in Hollywood seem to be picking up a little bit, which I'm glad to see. You know, it's all still messy. Nobody knows what anybody wants, which, you know, I've said this before, just write the thing you want to see. Write the thing you want to see. Everyone just wants to see that passion on the page. They want to see stories that they haven't seen before. That's what you've got. So keep writing, keep at it. I believe in you. And I thank you for believing in me and letting me continue to do this podcast as well as the newsletter. Supporting the newsletter does support the podcast. So thank you for that. You can go over to benblacker.substack.com. And if you become a paid subscriber, you'll be supporting this endeavor, which is not no work. But you'll also, even better, get access to our monthly Q&As with professional writers, where you show up, you ask the Qs, they provide the As. These have always been really fun. You know, we've been doing them over a year now. The most recent with Patrick Schumacher and Justin Halpern, the creators of the Harley Quinn TV show and executive producers of Abbott Elementary. We've got a whole bunch of great ones lined up. You can listen to all the past recordings of previous episodes or previous Q&As rather. And they're always great. Like, the advice is terrific. It's always a good time. The guests have been so forthcoming and so honest about their experiences in the business of television that it's always really helpful and eye-opening. So once again, to join those Q&As, become a paid subscriber, support the podcast, go to benblacker.substack.com. Thank you so much for listening. Please enjoy today's episode.
They write, they talk, and talk about what they write. Tune in tonight, or whenever the time is right. It's The Writer's Panel with Ben Blacker, and it's starting now. Oh, yeah!
Melanie Marnich is here. Melanie, tell the folks where they have seen your name on their television screens in the past.
Yeah, I can do some deep cuts. I started on Big Love, then The Big C, Low Winter Sun, The OA, The Affair. Trying to think. And then now, hopefully, they will watch my new show, Apples Never Fall, on Peacock.
Yeah, congrats on that. And let's talk about Apples Never Fall. Let's start with that. And where did this show come from? How did you get involved? What about it spoke to you?
Oh, that's a good one. It came about because my agent sent me a galley for this book. And said, you're going to want to read this. It's amazing. And it could go. It could go. And I was like, okay.
Let me stop you right there and ask, like, so you've been working, you know, pretty consistently since you got into the business. Were you in a place where it was like trying to get something off the ground and they were not going?
I was actually in a place. I had just wrapped. Oh, the other most recent thing I'd done is A Murder at the End of the World. So I had just finished writing on that. And I had said to my agent, I said, I think I need a little break. So I was actually in the opposite place. It's like, I need rest. And she gave me, I don't know, 12 days max. So I was like, I need a month. I was honestly kind of looking, I have to think back. Oh, I remember exactly. I was like, I need to take a break because I need to hear myself again. I need to hear myself, like, as a writer. You know, it's really, I think as a TV writer, your job is a certain kind of ventriloquism when you talk as somebody else. Like it's like you're always trying to talk as the show creator or the voice of a character that you didn't create or whatever. And I was like, I started as a playwright, which is all about hearing yourself, and then had, you know, was. A very fortunate career in TV, which I've loved every minute of, but I remember saying to her, like, I need to hit pause for a second and hear myself again. And it was sort of in that lull that she, of course, because she's an amazing agent, she just ignored my request for rest and sent this. And it was, the galleys for Apples Never Fall. And there was something about Leon's writing and this particular, I'm a big fan of hers from way back, but also this particular book that did indeed speak to me and really strike me, so that I felt that me hearing myself again and working on this project weren't mutually exclusive. They were the same thing. And I would say by that, I mean the themes in Leon's book about, you know, how she writes about long-term marriage, how she writes about family, how she writes about regrets, hopes, resentment, love, all of it. Like, I think they were some, she's asking some big questions in the book that I think all of us at a certain point are also looking at, you know? And I was just intrigued immediately. The writing's incredible, but so are the characters are incredible. The mystery, in those, and also the deep thematic work that she did in the book. So, I read it and I don't even think it took me a chapter. I think I called my agent. I'm like, this is mine. This is mine. And David Heyman, the producer, David Heyman with, Heyday Productions, had the option on the book. And so the first step was meeting with him and talking about my take on it. And he and I had the same priorities, which was really important. I would say to any writer looking to adapt something or to pair up with a producer or whomever, to really do like a deep vivisection on what you each want for the project. What you both see, and this is going to sound very obvious, but it's not, that you both want the same show. And sometimes that's hard to vet. And sometimes you don't know that you don't want the same things till it's too late, you know? But in this case, Dave and I talked about what really mattered to us. And we both loved this rip-roaring crime thing in the book that kept it moving. But the thing that we wanted to explore were the relationships between the characters and the deep, deep storytelling there. So met with him, we found out we were on the same page, and then we sold it to Peacock, who's been phenomenally supportive from the jump.
That's great. It's interesting to me. I want to dig a little deeper on this conversation you had about, you know, what you respond to in the book and what you wanted to pull forward. You know, it's one thing to walk into one of these producer meetings and say the relationships among the characters, right? That's what we do. That's what TV is. So how did you make this yours? Like, I imagine there were a bunch of people vying for this, or even if not specifically this book, that is the case, you know, on other properties.
Yeah, there were indeed. There were indeed. I think this would have been a project that could have easily, and in a really fun way, sort of stayed on the surface of the characters. And I mean, the book doesn't. The book goes deep, but I think the trick in creating and adapting it for TV was to say, oh, sort of the seductive part, the easy part is the mystery. And then you sprinkle in some great character work around it. The trick was saying the mystery happens because of the implosions of each character. And the implosions of each character happen because of the mystery. And that sort of braiding and threading of those two storylines, if you want to say those two story engines, was really important. And it required coming up with even more mythology for each character than was in the book. Changing a lot of things from what they were in the book, even though the book provided this incredible foundation. Really, you know, the book and the show is also about, you know, we may think we know the people we're closest to. We may think we know our families, our lovers, our partners, or whom our best friends, but we don't. And maybe we're actually kind of lying to each other. And it's, you know, to when I say the deep character work, not just like, oh, that's a lie. Well, why did you lie? Where did the wound get created in your heart, your soul, your mind years ago that made that lie a necessity? And to get to really keep doing that sort of like kind of depth charges through a character and their psyche was, I think, different and really something I'd love. But I think it could have been easy. It would have been easier to not do that. It was really hard work in the writer's room. It had to be really organic. And, you know, we would sit there in the writer's room, I had a phenomenal group of writers, and we would break a story and then we'd sit there and look at it on the boards and be like, okay, that technically works. That's technically fine. It's great, whatever. But the question was always, well, what's the Apple's version of that? And for me, it was always bringing a bit of a twist, a bit of a surprise. And if you expected something to zig, we zagged. And so we did that again with the character work as much as with the crime.
I love that. And it feels like with the character work, that's where you can find those surprises. I mean, it feels like with something like this, you're fairly beholden to the story of the book, right? The mystery that unfolds. But as you're digging in on this character stuff, it's not just invention, but it's discovery and revealing things at different times. That must have been really exciting. How did you, like, what was your North Star? How did you know to trust yourself? Those might be two different questions.
No, that's a really, it's funny. I was just thinking that the other day, like how, I think when things felt like a straight arrow, if I could see the straight arrow, it just would start to bug me. And it is sort of an instinct thing. And it has to do, how do I say this? I don't know. I think every project for me anyway, it's going to sound a little woo-woo, exists on a sort of frequency, like a radio frequency. The sound of it, the humor of it, the drama of it, the pace of it, all kind of comes together on this like frequency. And when that frequency falls flat, if you know what that frequency is, if you know that tone of that show, if you know the tone of each character, you can sense when it's falling flat. And flat might be absolutely logical, but it isn't on the frequency, like a maybe like a flat note or something that a musician would hear. And it would just not feel special. It would feel like has that frequency. Leanne's work exists on a frequency that was very hard to translate. You know, it wasn't a literal, pardon the pun, but apples to apples translation for us, because what she was able to do in the book, we couldn't necessarily do in TV and vice versa. So much internal work in her book was, you know, brought the humor, the frequency that I'm talking about. And obviously you can't get into somebody's internal monologue in TV. You have to have them active. But the book informed us tonally, deeply. It has a lot of humor. And I think part of the frequency and what you're asking, like, how would I know, is that it was finding this very delicate balance between the drama of the mystery and the secrets coming to light from the characters, and then knowing when to weave in humor and oddness and a bit of quirk. And I would call it torque. Like when I was saying, like, sometimes things would feel too straight on, we had to bring torque and twist it. And that let humor come in to all of this in a really organic way that was sort of the Apple's version of it. And it's also, you as a writer and any writer, I think, can appreciate this. For us, it wasn't about jokes. There isn't one joke in the show. The characters had to have wit. And so when wit wasn't alive, when there wasn't an intelligence from the characters keeping their stories alive, their voices alive, you felt that flatness. You felt it fall off the frequency.
Sure. That absolutely makes sense. I'm wondering, you know, I don't know your early work. I don't know the playwriting you did, but you've been working for other people for a long time. You've been writing other people's voices. Does Apples represent a similar kind of point of view that you were doing, that you were writing as a playwright? Does it represent your interest in that way and your tone?
No, I think everything I do is really, I'm sure somebody could look at what, like, my body of work and say, oh, of course, there's a through line, a similarity. I'd be like, oh, you're crazy. To me, why I picked it is because it felt different. I love always kind of going to school on a project and always learning, and always like, okay, great. This is my next MFA program, learning how to adapt Leanne's beautiful book. What it does represent, and I always say this, like when I talk to people, like, oh, how do you pick a job, or how do you try to build your career? I think I did it weirdly, but it's worked. And I always say, I've never taken a job. I've always pursued shows that are asking, or projects that are asking a question that I, at that point in my life, was asking too. And so Leon's book, this project, doesn't feel like an extension so much of anything I've done. It felt like kind of a new chapter, yet it dwelt in those big kind of life questions that I myself was asking.
Well, let's get into that. I think that's really a fascinating way to chase projects and to look for jobs. What have some of those been? I mean, you sort of talked about the shows you've been on. You've been with the shows that you worked on for a good amount of time too, from Big Love, Big C, The Affair, The OA. Like, what were some of the questions that you got to explore on some of those shows?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, you know, completely correlate as a therapist might like it to be, but I would say, okay, like I was fairly newly married and there was this show, Big Love, that I was submitted, my work was submitted for. And I was like, oh, how fascinating. I'm married. I didn't get married young. I got married, you know, as a grown up. And to me, like you bring certain things to it and certain questions. And it's, and I was like, how interesting to go work on a show that looks at love a different way, that looks at marriage a different way, that asks how expansive it can be. That to me, like my connection to Big Love had to do with what is marriage and what is love. The Big C, I'll be quite blunt, I had lost my dad to cancer. And as you know, so many of us are, you know, affected by that, you know, in our circles, in our lives. And to then have a chance, he had passed maybe a few months before I started that show. And I think he was ill when I interviewed for it. And I really wanted to look at, like the show does, how does one keep living in the face of something catastrophic? So that, you know, and it's so, for me, I love if I can bring my direct personal experience and my direct personal questions to a show. I think it helps my engagement with the show, but also I think helps the show, you know, not to be, I would hope my colleagues would agree, but I think it's something, I think in those rooms, a lot of us brought a lot of ourselves. You know, honestly, I can skip ahead even to the OA, which, gosh, that was, I don't know, 2015. And I'd had a lot of loss in my life and was sort of obsessed with, is all we see all there is? Is there something more? And that was definitely at the heart of that show. You know, is there a beyond? Is there, are there parallel universes? Who knows? You know, the OA was so wonderfully open-minded. And I got to dive into those questions and that research on that show. And then on this show, I think for me, it was really about looking at, you know, I don't have siblings. And I've always been obsessed with siblings because I'm obsessed with how you can fight with people and they can slam the door, or you can slam the door, but they're still your brother or sister. I don't, like, people without siblings don't have that in their lives. You go, oh my goodness. You know, I'm a lone satellite. And I've always been obsessed with the bonds that keep a family a family.
I always think of writing on some level as asking a question, exploring a question, or answering a question. And it sounds like, you know, these have been ways, especially, you know, we can talk about Apple specifically. These have been ways to explore a question. I wonder if you found answers. What did you learn, you know, philosophically from working on this show?
I don't know if I learned so much as I got to dwell in the curiosity until the new curiosity came around.
Mm-hmm. The exploration, sure.
Yeah, I got to dwell in the exploration. I got to dwell. It was always beautiful to me because it's amazing. What I love about TV is that you're sitting in a room with a bunch of really brilliant people and you're all just sort of, you know, trying to find your way through this forest of questions and trying to build these stories. I mean, I've had the great good fortune to work on incredible shows that I think aimed really, really high regarding what they were asking, you know, or what they were looking at. And they were shows that embraced, well, this is the other thing I actually look for, moral complexity. True moral complexity, and not, I think with all my projects, you could say, oh, there wasn't good, bad, dark and light, you know, like all those shows really were striving to look at all the shades and gradations within a human. So yeah, I don't know if I got answers. I do know on the OA every now and then I fell into despair when I was like, there's nothing afterwards. Our brains are just computers. And then someone unplugs them and we're done. And that wasn't what I wanted to hear at that point. And I was like, yeah, it's rational. They're like, do not dwell on the rational. So that was this really a great experience, but also that show was, but, it was rigorous and I had to like probably face the limits of, my own very flawed logic around some things.
That's fair. Let's get into some nuts and bolts stuff. Is Apples Never Fall your first show running job?
Yep.
All right. Let's get into it. let's talk first about putting together that room. Where did you find your room? It sounds like it was a terrific room. Who were they? Did you know them before? What did you read? What did you respond to?
Yeah, I knew two of them. I knew two of them. And then, oh gosh, I have to think back. It's just, you know, a reading frenzy. I'm sure, you know, you've heard all about it. Like when your room gets picked up and it really is just like calling in, you know, agents and friends and saying, this is what I need. This is distinctly what I need. This is what I don't need. This is what I need help with. I've been the number two a lot on shows and helped people run shows. So this wasn't like, ooh, what is that? You know, it's I've been in this business long enough to have like kind of gone up a rung at a time, you know, it's which I'm very grateful for. I'm trying to think. One person I know I didn't know. And came in as I talked to my neighbors who are incredible writers and a great writing team. And I was like, I need a person to do blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, have we got the guy? And I read him and I met with him. And I hired him. Like it came from such a great personal recommendation. I would say one thing I did, obviously you want great writers. You want people who can pitch story, but I also tried to hire to my weaknesses. I know what I'm really good at. And I know what I'm not so good at. So I tried to find people who were really good at what I'm not so good at so that I could kind of relax and be like, hey, you take that. Like, that's terrific. And that really worked. I mean, knock wood, that really worked.
What were those for you?
I'm probably not the most linear thinker. I think I break story pretty well and pretty rapidly, but I'm not like, I don't know how to say it. My brain doesn't work A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. It works a little more eclectically. And then the work for me is to put that into linear order versus colleagues who literally think in linear order. And I would have to like be like, okay, now let's mess it up. Let's take that out of linear order. You know, there was always kind of this balance. So people who like, process things very linearly, who I can't think and write on the big whiteboards at the same time. I have to stare at the whiteboards. Like that's part of my process is literally staring at the board. So I was like, okay, who loves being at the board? Who loves standing there writing down what I say? Or what somebody like that, finding people who are like, oh, that's how I self-soothe. I have to be at the board. It's like fabulous. So like these complementary strengths of like things that let me sit back and do the creative work I need to do while hiring people who sought order and organization in the creative process, who were excellent in that, at that and really were compelled toward doing that. Really was great. Like I had a couple of writers. I was like, oh, I hate thinking of how to do a schedule. And they were like, oh my God, I would love to do a schedule. Like, that kind of person mystifies me. I'm like, really? Take it, do it. So that kind of stuff, because I feel like, you know, we're all good creatively. That's why, you know, you're not hiring anybody in the room who isn't great. But what are the different, like, what skill sets get on the front burner for different people? And if it's people who, you know, one of my writers, what is it? She loves playing time management games on her phone. I'm like, what? Are you a maniac? You're hired. A great writer who is obsessed with time management. What else could you ask for? You know, so just that's like those little like game pieces, you know, those little puzzle pieces that make up, or like to say the writer's room is a buffet. Like you need every flavor in there, you know, and but the given is that they're good writers. They're great writers. The given is that they pitch. The given, you know, is that they're going to deliver great drafts. You know, sometimes stories don't work out and you have to go, oh my gosh, you know, we have to, you know, we had one episode, we kept trying to crack and thought we had it. And then I remember like get up and get a snack or something. I was like, came back. I was like, we don't have it. Like we don't. And it was high. We wrote the script. Like we tried to make it work. And you know, that says a lot of the writer's room that like people were all in it. You know, we didn't just settle. And even I think we turned it in for notes and everything. And I think I called maybe the studio. I said, we're rebreaking it. And to have writers who are tireless that will be like, yes, let's rebreak it. You know, let's do that. And it worked. I think it's one of the strongest episodes. They're all really great, but it was really worth going back in. But you want writers who, remember I said to one of my writers, I was like, I can't sleep when something isn't working. And she was like, me too. Lose a lot of sleep. But also like a feeling in the room. I think you want different kinds of writers with different strengths. But I would say for me, what's very important is that they are united by the same good taste. Everybody should have different kinds of pitches, but they should be in the realm of the taste of the show.
That was actually my next question, was like, how do you get them to that same place? How do you start to say like, this is the world of the show, this is the taste of the show? What kind of work had you done leading up to it? And then what were those early conversations like?
I think it really helped having a pilot script and people who were rigorous writers, who were really rigorous readers, who read that and took it apart and were like, you know, had questions. And we like discussed the pilot and decisions that were made. I had done a lot of, for the pitch, a lot of story work, like what the whole show would be. And like being able to take the writers through that whole document and saying, this is what it is. This is how it feels. This is what we need to work on. This is what we have to flesh out. And there was a lot of work to be done. And really, I think particularly in early days, but even the first day in the room, I talk about what I think is important to writing and what was important to the show. You know, what I learned in writing the pilot, which is significant, you know, what my first draft was versus where we wound up, how it had evolved, I think is just really important. It was important for us to talk about. And again, like getting writers who are just so smart. I mean, that's what's fun about TV. Writers are smart and they're ambitious. You know what I mean? Like it's no one's phoning it in. Like it's really dynamic and challenging. Yeah. And I think, you know, as we sit in a room and pitch and talk about what's working, what's not working, I think for sure in early weeks, I will, even though time's always of the essence, like if a pitch isn't landing, I can say why. It isn't just no, you know, the why. And then so as you go on, that tends to fade away a bit, you know, like it's people get more, the Venn diagrams are overlapping more and more as you go on.
You touched on, you know, writers who love scheduling, writers who think in this linear way. Now, as a showrunner, you're also, you know, sort of running this huge corporation that is the show. And that takes a certain amount of that kind of organization and that kind of time management. So how did you start to tackle that stuff?
Oh, that, like, outside the room, it's fine. Like, that, I'm okay. Like, that, I don't not do that. Be clear. I don't. It was more about, like, the in the room, you know, like, in the room, how people think and work. You are suddenly an industry. You know, you go from whatever, you know, writing your scripts to, you know, when you hear the call that your show's been picked up, you are instantly a startup company with millions and millions of dollars that you're responsible for, massive schedules that you are responsible for, people and their well-being and their creativity that you are responsible for. And then, you know, this production, this beast kind of starts to take form, you know, called production. And I personally love it all. I find it extremely fulfilling. I think what I think is amazing about this business is that as a writer, it does call on you to use all those parts of yourself. You know, so it is, yes, from 10 to 6 or whatever was, I was in the writer's room before that, lunch, after that, I'm on calls about scheduling, I'm on calls about budget, I'm on calls about casting. We, in this case, we shot in Australia, you know, it's about setting up the show in Australia so that you're putting on hat after hat after hat. And I find that really energizing and really interesting. It's a lot, you know, it's a lot. But what you also do as you're building this machine is you're also hiring people whose expertise is to do that, that you could lean on, you know, be it your line producer, whomever, like you hire the best of the best, hopefully. And you can say, okay, phenomenal casting director, go. And who you're being presented with are like, oh my gosh, this is stunning. These are stunning choices, or whomever it might be. So it's both an almost unimaginable amount of management, while it's also very careful delegation that you, of course, are also overseeing.
Were there aspects that were difficult for you to delegate?
All of it. Because I guess underneath it, I was like, yeah, I'm a control freak. I think it's really kind of a nightmare for me. I don't know, to let go. You know, you just want to get under the hood of everything. And yeah, it's extremely hard. And I probably kind of think, yeah, I mean, it's, I think what's really maybe hardest, I guess this would make sense, is anything creative. Do you know what I mean? Like any idea. You know, the passes on scripts or whatever, of course, but like any time, I don't know, like just being, I guess that's also inherent in people who like to do this job, just making sure, like, I don't know how other showrunners work, but everything went through my computer, you know, everything has to, and just making sure, and I think it paid off. It paid off in terms of a cohesive tone, you know, it paid off, but also I had, you know, brilliant writers. And one thing I try and instill early in my room is that we will all probably work on each other's work. You know, we're honoring this thing called the show. So we all just have to let go of sometimes our own work to, you know, be in service of that thing. So I think sometimes just the creative stuff is hard because you do have it in your mind as a tone. Yeah, all of it is hard to let go of. I'm going to leave it at that. Everything.
But it sounds like you brought in collaborators who you got and who got you, you know, and you were able to communicate to them what this show is. So I would imagine that, like, that helped a lot. You know, you weren't working against anyone.
Yeah. You know, we had like our production designer, Tony Fanning, absolutely brilliant. So it's like, if you talk about like letting go of something, I could talk to him about what it needed to be. And then he could bring me his model. He could bring me his, you know, his sketches. He could bring me whatever he's saying. And I'd be like, oh my gosh, that is what I was thinking, but better. And that's what you want. That's where it becomes okay to kind of, I'm gonna put this in air quotes, let go. Yeah. You never let go, but you're like, oh, this person has it and it and he took it farther. Our costume designer, Allison Fanger, same thing. She should come in with, you know, wardrobe and I'd be like, oh my gosh, that's what I imagined and better. You know, like suddenly you're relaxing into this a bit. And as the machine is moving, that is very important.
What to you on Apples Never Fall is like, what was the big triumph for you? What is the thing that you look at and say, like, I can't believe I pulled that off, or we pulled that off, or I can't believe like that represents me on the screen, whatever it is.
I am incredibly proud that I created a room and cast a show that, stepping back, I can say was an absolutely great experience. And the people involved were such, from the room to the cast to the crew to everybody, like such incredibly smart, gifted collaborators. I am thrilled. There wasn't a hitch. Like, I don't know how that happened. We just had grownups involved at every step. And it was one of the most, I can't say easy, because obviously these things are incredible, an incredible amount of work. But psychologically, like to just feel like happiness, joy, and satisfaction when you look around, be it the room or the set, is a really rare thing. And that was, that happened here. And I would say maybe it gets ultimately embodied in our cast and their performances, that I feel like looking at them, and we would joke about this on set, like they became a family. They talk about it still. They did become the Delaneys. And I think I was reading something and someone referred to it as very lived in performances. Like it felt like they knew each other. It felt like they came to this with years of familial connections. That's something, maybe of course, I hope it starts with the writing, but they also achieved because they felt safe, because they were brilliant. These are top tier actors who were generous with each other, with the material, treated everybody around them with respect. So I think you see in the show a family, and it's about a family, and I don't think that's always the case.
Yeah, but, and that's always impressive, and like you hit on, I feel like the thing I'm always chasing, which is this lived-in feeling of people who have known each other, which is so hard to accomplish because often these people just met, and to get that is kind of amazing.
Yeah. Well, one thing we did before they all met, I'm trying to think, I was in Australia, but the actors are not there yet. The director and I had them start a sibling text chain, like right after they got cast. And then, so you can imagine Jake and Allison and Connor and Essie, like that took off like wildfire. And then I hope I'm not misspeaking here, but then I think that sibling text chain happened and they just went bonkers. They just like enjoyed it so much. And they worked that sibling vibe, which I was not privy to what was going on in the text. But then I feel like,
which is great. Like they should have that.
Exactly. Because
it makes it what you want. Yeah.
And then I think, I want to say that Annette and Sam were like, hey, wait, we heard there's a Delaney text chain. And the kids were like, oh, yeah. Do you want to be a part of it? And they're like, yeah. So I think there's then a family text chain. But then the kids had to create yet another one that like, they're like, okay, the parents got in on that one. Now we have to create a separate secret child-sibling text chain. So they did literally have this great family dynamic. And I think it was just so important. Like when they, I always feel it as a writer, what's very important to remember when you create your characters, you may have one or two leads in your show, but every character in your show thinks they're starring in their own show. They, you know, the Troy character did not think Joy was the star. Troy thought Troy was the star. Troy walks into every room with his story. And I think this sort of like them getting to know each other, they came in with their own story. They came in sort of knowing each other's stories. So that was part of this incredible, if I were to look at it, like somehow we created this thing that let this bloom, you know, let that sort of thing bloom that that enriched the story and the show.
That is so cool. I love to hear that. And it's so smart. And I think, you know, you touched on this when you talked about how, you know, this family feeling like these actors feeling like a family, but that stuff does start on the page. You know, these characters who think that the show is their show, you know, any tertiary character should be able to be spun off into their own show. That starts on the page. That's how you all were writing these characters. And that's strong writing.
It's one thing we did when our line producer first came and looked, met the writers. I came in the writer's room. He's like, oh my God, the whiteboards were a thing of beauty. Like we had, every wall had a whiteboard because every character had not just their story. They had their deep, deep, deep backstory. Every character, because they have to, as I say, they walk into the room with that story in their bones. So when we were like, you know, checking the plumb line on every one of those characters and their stories, like we could look at those boards. We had boards for the mystery. We had boards for the cops. We had boards, but we also had boards for just each kid and what went wrong in their lives, when, who was there, what happened, what did they say to when. And so kind of these vivisections around the room that we could keep referring to as we wrote. So I think when we had a scene, we wrote even a little scene, each of those little scenes carried the history of that character and carried the history of what conflict. Yeah, you know, it's basic writing, but it's also when you're off to the races, like TV writing can be, you know, when you're up against production, you're like, oh, let's just get him to the restaurant. Well, maybe he hates that restaurant. Maybe he never want to go to that restaurant. He's angry at his sister because she suggested it because they had a fight there. He got divorced there. I don't, you know, like the restaurant isn't just a location. It has a meaning. And you know, we created a very vivid world for everybody that we did adhere to.
Well, and it shows without being showy, which is the best execution of that. So congrats. Apples Never Fall, so folks can watch all of them. We'll end as we always do by asking you what you are watching on television these days. What's getting you excited or inspired? What are you talking about with your friends and loved ones?
Oh my goodness. Okay. A lot.
Let's get into it.
I'm loving Masters of the Air. Who knew?
What is it about that?
You know what? I love really good war stories. I would never write one, and I don't necessarily read them, but I'm like, oh my God, they're going up in those planes again. Oh my God, no. And I think it's phenomenally produced and directed. I think it's just really phenomenal. That's the new look I'm into. Curb Your Enthusiasm. This is like a beefy Curb Your Enthusiasm Shogun. I'm accessing something deep in myself. Just watched All of Us Strangers, the movie. Absolutely gorgeous. Absolutely beautiful. Zone of Interest blew my mind. Just so important, so powerful. Just incredible. About to tuck into Fargo season 5. Slow Horses. Loved it. Right? I could watch Gary Oldman, you know, read a menu. So that's okay.
Read a menu and be disgusting about it.
I could do a deep dive on his career over and over and over. He's so good. But yeah, that's my quick list.
That's a good list. I said before we even started, like, I'm so glad that you are someone who watches TV, who watches movies, you're taking in all this stuff, and you're still excited about this business, you know, despite having worked in television for a while.
Well, we're so lucky. I feel so lucky. I always say I feel like the luckiest gal. I get up with, like, my job is to tell stories, you know, it is and to entertain and to make people kind of, I thought this way when I was a playwright. Like I always felt as a playwright that I wanted my audience to, you know, they've hired babysitters, they paid for parking, they walked through the cold, and I want them to sit down and be transported and then be glad they were. I feel the same about TV. I think what we get to do is I think we get to perform alchemy for people. And that is a thrill and an honor.
Well, thanks for doing it. Melanie, thanks so much for chatting today.
I really appreciate your time. Thank you so much.